Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And we are off, or up, and or up and off, and running for this second day of August 2016. August is well underway, and so are we. And this is the Horn Head On Radio Network.com is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to jump into the madcap, zany, merry multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Oh my goodness gracious, yes. Just head over to headonradionetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be right there in the thick of things and greeted by Hoghead, Jeremy, Jugapunch, Laborman, Steve from Georgistan, and VT Blom. All capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has the powers to, but has chosen not to, fold space to become man cave. I reckon it's must be kind of furnace-like in the man cave this evening. Thank you very kindly, Steve from Georgistan, saying great job covering for Mike Malloy last night. I appreciate it. I had a blast. I hope you all did too. And big thumbs up and crossed fingers and everything to Mike as he attempts a return to the microphone tonight. I think that mustard plaster must have done him some good. Even the mere threat of a mustard plaster will often get people up and moving and in the healing way in a real quick-like fashion. Yeah, which reminds me, do people even know what a mustard plaster is? They're brutal. Thank you very kindly, Thomas. Hear you loud and clear on FYINation.com. Happy Tuesday. Don't get trumped by an iceberg. I'll try not to, because it is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Uh-huh. And Titanic Tuesday, of course, is reserved for celebrating those Titanic moments of right-wing intellect, or exercises, or attempts thereof. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And the name, of course, comes from something that Jim heard many, many years ago on local right-wing radio in America's fifth smallest radio market, namely Beckley, when one of the knuckle-breathing, mouth-walking followers of the local right-wing blatherer called in and said, "Steve, how come you reckon it is that there is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? Because we ain't nowhere near the beach." To which, in one of the world's greatest monotones, he replied, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Yeah. Still no word on the movement of the Titanic salad tongs. No. Hoghead says, I've heard of mustard plasters, but I've never experienced one. It will, it'll open you up. I mean, mustard is kind of hot. You know, I mean, you know, when we talk about deviled eggs or deviled this or that, that's what Europeans used for, you know, to hot and spicy things up before the Columbian Exchange brought on, brought the chili pepper into the world spotlight. But yeah, a mustard plaster will, you'll run. Mm-hmm. So, Titanic Tuesday, right? Yes. And we got plenty to work with. Of course, a gentle and general reminder, we try to raise $200 every evening because this is a listener-supported program. 200 bucks an evening, 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 and a quarter, and or 64 at $3 and 13 cents, because we just give up and round up from 12 and a half, right? If you want to help out, go over to headonradionetwork.com, click on contribute, fill out the forms, leave blank the ones about what you do for Elmer J. Fudd, millionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht, and just get to the next screen. It's always just about getting. I mean, that's the whole of the internet. Just get to the next screen, and there you can do your PayPal, credit card, whatever kind of thing. And a reminder, you will see there on the first page a little box that says, make this a recurring donation. And if you click that, you will then become a monthly subscriber. We're still looking for 400 people at 10 bucks a month. We haven't even gotten to 100 yet. Some have fallen away. And we certainly can use all the subscribers we can get. And it's a great, easy, and handy way to support the horn. Just set it and forget it. And boom. No, you wouldn't, Asa. Brother Deacon Asa says, I'd pay good money to hear Steve O'Brien on the air again. You don't want people driving into phone poles being lulled to sleep by that stentorian monotone, do you? No. If you prefer to help support the program via the traditional mails, you can always send checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. Mm-hmm. And with that in mind, stand by. Okay, sorry about that. Where was I? Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. And send me an email. I'll tell Bossman Wayne to be on the lookout for your correspondence so he can leave the spider-proof gloves in the truck. He wears those when he opens the mailbox and expects it to be empty because, well, the spiders just about can... chew the flesh right off one's bones when they're feeling cranky. Yeah. Okay, so that bit of business is out of the way. And where do we pick up? Well, where did we leave off? I am glad to know, I am very glad to know, that there was a I mentioned last night the, you know, my name is Donald J. Trump, millionaire. I own a mansion and a yacht. Yeah, how do you do? Glad to meet you. No. I'm glad to know that I'm not the only one whose brain cells are taken up with memories of old Warner Brothers cartoons instead of being able to remember things like the quadratic equation. Or who played the Cisco Kid. Mm-hmm. I have a note to that effect from Jennifer down in up over in Australia. where, oh my God, it's, I guess, 6:10 a.m. Oof. Jen says, I swear to you, I imagined this before you chatted about the Donald J. Trump millionaire. I own a mansion and a yacht. And by the way, that, as we were reminded last night, and thank you for the reminder, that comes from the short hairbrush, H-A-R-E-B-R-U-S-H. Hillary's October surprise, waiting till then, so the orange tomato bug, I do like that, hasn't enough time to hit back in kind. Could be a series of advertisements produced in half animation with her critiquing Trump as the grotesque cartoon character he is in full color and gore, using actual audio of his greatest hits, but with her in the flesh rebutting them. There wouldn't be so much license to just go crazy on him. Oh, what could be done with that head and hair in anime, making him into an even bigger joke than he is? And why hold back? The boy brats must, in Uday and Kusei style, have animated cameos torturing things that can't fight back, making the rugs on which Melanoma splays herself with her weapon of mass destruction strapped across her naked chest. We hardly even got to, did we get to the fact that the New York Post went out and found some of those, And whenever you do or think about Donald Trump talking, you have to use his dick finger, you know, the one that points up. And there were very artful, tasteful photographs of melanoma. Right. Well, the New York Post went out, and you know, this is a Rupert Murdoch thing, so it may actually be something that's presumed to work to the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini's benefit. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Did I get that part? Tim's not in the room, so it's kind of hard to tell. I don't know. There are probably Bubbas all over Murka. The greatest country in the history of the world, in the universe, today, forever, now, under God, amen. FOB. Yeah, right, whatever. Yeah. oh, they are. They're tasteful photos. I got nothing against anybody who does nude photos. I remember back in my days in college when there were calls that went out from the art department at Harvard on the Mon for anybody who would be willing to accept a modest monetary sum to pose nude for art class, you know, people learning human anatomy and stuff like that. I was, of course, far too shy. Really shy. Very shy. Freezing cold water shy. But anyway. I got nothing against that. And, you know, insofar as Melanoma delivered a stump speech at her husband's convention, I personally think she's fair game. And isn't it just a little bit sexist to say that she's off limits? And it's okay if you disagree. I'm open to that. We can do that here, as long as we can do it without saying, you know, things like, you know, fuck you, Kincaid. Right? Yeah. And back to Jen. Naked, her weapon of mass destruction strapped across her naked chest. Yeah, or maybe her architecture degree. Oh, wait, that would just leave her chest naked, because she says she has one, but she doesn't. Anyway, Jen concludes, what a crew. I wonder if Jill Stein has heard that he intends to have family brainstorming sessions in the Oval Office with Tiffany left out then as well. Ew! And it was after the program last night that I saw a reference to Jill Stein as the progressive answer to Sarah Palin, except with tofu. I'm inclined to, yeah. Right, Hoghead in the chat room says, huh, Chelsea Clinton wasn't off limits. Yeah, I remember when Flush Flimball referred to her as, my friends, the White House dog, Chelsea Clinton. Give me another one of those Oxycontins to chew on. I enjoy chewing it up for the refreshing burst of flavor, my friends. Mm-hmm. But, anyway, so on to another piece of correspondence. This comes from an email address that says messaging matters and doesn't have a name attached to it. Subject, voting. I'm in your camp in regards to voting third party, since the Constitution accidentally set up a two-party system. We need to vote blue, no matter who. I'm a Bernie-crat, and I agree with you about Hillary and that we're stuck voting for her. We need to get other liberals on board with infiltrating the Democrats. Bernie proved infiltration is the way to go. We almost won the nomination on our first attempt. They had to cheat to stop us. We need to encourage voting, not discourage it. After all, it's a democracy. I think that's offered tongue-in-cheek. It's a democracy. You and your caller from Louisiana, that would be Jim, say that your vote doesn't matter because Trump is going to win your respective states. I disagree. Well, okay, and I mean, I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable, but math is real. And I don't care if you're in Louisiana Stan, West Virginia Stan, Tennessee Stan, Kentucky Stan, South Carolina Stan, Alabama, Mississippi Stan, Georgia Stan, Texas Stan, Oklahoma Stan, Kansas Stan, Missouri Stan, and or any of the other Stan states, Arizona Stan. No, Tim from L.A., you haven't qualified for a Stan yet in California. Sorry. I mean, you've got things like the Medicaid expansion and a Democratic state government. I mean, there's rather an overwhelming majority of Democrats in the California Assembly, are there not? Yeah, that's what I thought. But no, math is real, and there is. And I don't like saying it, but in places like the ones I just mentioned, I'd say that Jill Tofu Stein and Hillary probably have a pretty nearly equal chance of being victorious. No, that's not fair, Jill Tofu Stein. No, more like Jill Wi-Fi Stein. That Wi-Fi is going to get your youngins. Right. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they do. Nonetheless, our correspondent here says, I disagree. We need to encourage liberals to vote in red states, too. Well, I'm not discouraging voting. Look, there's a lot. The presidential election here in West Virginia is meaningless to me, and it has been made so not by my lack of enthusiasm for Madam Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton, but by the fact that my fellow West Virginians are hell-bent on failing in spectacular fashion our quadrennial IQ test. Hey, you're a dead-ass broke state with a crumbling mono economy, no way forward, and you take in a hell of a lot more federal tax dollars than you send out. Who are you going to vote for? Well, I'm going to vote for Trump. He's going to make America great again because he's going to make them little Keebler co-elves make some more co down in the ground. Yerp. What, Gerald? Get on with it, Bob. Just say anywhere south of the Mason-Dixon line. Well, I mean, there's kind of Florida, and that's south of the Mason-Dixon line. But that's about the end of it. And there's some plenty north of the Mason-Dixon line. So, but I'm going to vote down. I'm excited about voting down ballot. I can't wait to get into that booth and cast my lone vote to try to get Thomas Fast out of the legislature and stop having him personally embarrass me with his overbearing stupiditas. I mean, Jesus, jumping Christ. We're going to have ourselves another special session of the legislature, and it'll cost us more money that we here in West Virginia don't, by God, have. And the purpose of it is to deal with, you know, the recent flooding and the hell and damnation that it has wreaked upon many communities in this state. A particularized flooding story here later. It being Titanic Tuesday and all. So what does our teabagging legislature do? I mean, this is just precious. Our teabagging legislature declared that they, by God, have a list of stuff they want to accomplish, and at the head of their list is to pass a potty bill. Because they, being God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals, are terribly, terribly concerned about where the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual people of West by God, Virginia stand, go poo-poo and pee-pee. And whether or not they's wearing panties or boxers. Mm-hmm. Because that's the kind of thing you ain't supposed to be doing, but behind closed doors with nobody watching, and possibly a couple of scuba suits, butt plugs, and underwater masks, and a little bit of duct tape, and in the name of Jesus, of course. And Gerald Living here says, oh, I agree, Bob. Probably the only reason I'm even going to vote in November is for the down-ballot candidate. So I'm not discouraging anybody from voting. I'm just dealing with the reality. And you know what? It might be beneficial. In the stand states, if people, you know, do vote for Jill Wi-Fi Stein. Maybe it'll placate some of the hardcores in states that matter. I had a note from our buddy Scott saying he had just talked to his two adult children who are going to vote absentee, and they get to pick the state they vote in because they're international, and they've chosen Ohio. Good. And they're going to vote a straight Democratic ticket, because they don't want to see America ruled by, what was that, Jen, again? Yeah, an orange tomato bug. So, let's be clear, I'm not trying to discourage anyone from voting. But our correspondent says, it's Dean's 50-state strategy. We need to keep the pressure up in every state. Please stop discouraging red state voters by saying their vote doesn't matter. Instead, tell them they need to get their friends and family to vote blue. Remember Appalachian State versus Michigan. Appalachian State pulled off the miracle because of hard work and believing. Give your opponents hell, even if the odds aren't in your favor. How do you expect to win if we give up before the game even starts? Well, there's a big difference between Appalachian State versus Michigan. One, Michigan was in a down year. And the Republicans, the teabaggers, the birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, and booger-eaters in the red states are not experiencing a down year. They have a death grip on the politics of their states. So if this was Appalachian versus Michigan, it would be like the Appalachian State volleyball team versus the University of Michigan football team, playing football, mind you. But by all means, and you know, since the Greens don't run a whole lot of down ballot candidates, then, you know, yeah, do vote blue down the ticket. Absolutely. But if you're not in a swing state, I'm not going to sit and beat somebody over the head and demand that anybody vote for Hillary. Although, truth be told, I mean, given the way that the primaries worked, I mean, she'll get the majority of Democratic voters, but it won't much matter because they will be inundated by a blood red sea of toxic Trumpansy poo flinging. Our correspondent says, I've missed Malloy lately, but I bet he's still saying you won't vote for Hillary. Please talk to him about this. No, I won't. I won't. I'm not going to. I would never try to school Malloy on anything. Ain't my place. And kind of, too, going back to last night's little bit of correspondence, I'm not, because remember in the correspondence last night, this program, this community was accused of leading from behind. Check the intro to the program. You will not find leader in there anywhere, nor do I introduce myself as, well, hell, half the time I forget to introduce myself, but I never introduce myself as, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, your fearless leader. Because I'm not. We just have a little conversation here. We're not right-wing authoritarians, so we don't respond well to that kind of thing. If that makes any sense. We all need to get on the same page and infiltrate the Democrats. We tried the third-party route for years and got nowhere. Bernie woke up to this and is leading the way. We need to follow his example. And that's what it all boils down to for me. I mean, it really did make me sick when people at the convention last week they had previously been his supporters. They booed him. That was disgusting. They booed the guy that up until that moment had been, you know, touted as, you know, you are our only hope. Yeah. Our correspondent says, I love you. I love your show and the format. Keep up the great work. Well, thank you. And thank you very kindly for the note. I really do appreciate it. I love notes like that prompt. Prompt conversation. Ah, that's a good one. Steve, writing from New York. Jill, watered down beer stein. Near beer stein. Well, what, but you know, we're not gonna beat on. We're not gonna beat on poor Jill Stein. No point to it. No more point to beating on Jill Stein than there's any point to her, you know, candidacy. Yeah, well. So, a couple of things. Oh, we have a response, courtesy of Gerald, to the Get Your Friends and Neighbors to Vote Blue. Get our friends and family to vote blue? Let me ask you something, Bob. Have you even seen a Hillary campaign sign in this state, let alone the Trump signs found on damn near every house on every block? I have not seen a Hillary sign. I do not expect to see a Hillary sign, because even people who are going to vote for Hillary know better than to put one in the yard, because most people can't afford to just go out and buy a new house. They won't put a sticker on their car. Because they can't afford, well, I mean, maybe they can afford, but why have the needless expense of, you know, four new tires or brake lines cut or that kind of thing. I mean, we're talking about real pig-eyed meanness, okay? This isn't the genial contest that was mounted by Bishop Willard Romney. This is thuggish putsch style politics. And kind of dangerous around here. I did see a comment on Facebook from one person who said, "Yeah, I'll have a sign in my yard." Okay, good luck. Maybe it's far enough away from the road that it can't be reached with a hurled egg. Let's see here. It is Titanic Tuesday. And I mentioned the fact that we are going to have a special session of the legislature to deal with the flood damages, and that there was a Titanic Tuesday nomination in there too, which there is. So I mentioned that one of the places that was hit, Elkview, and that meant that a few hundred people were stranded because the bridge got washed out. There was Bob Evans over there. And, of course, Bob Evans is a big old corporation. And you know how it is with... you know how it is with corporations. Now, damn it. There it is.
Corporations are people, my friend. Of course they are. Yes. Human beings, my friend.
Yes. The people that is the Bob Evans family of companies decided. Well, they weren't able to do business after June the 23rd. Gerald, let me just check because he's with us. Gerald, have you eaten at that Bob Evans? I have. The walls there at the Bob Evans in Elkview, West Virginia, at the Elkview Crossing Shopping Center, whose bridge was wiped out, which is what stranded the people during the flood. Well, I mean, there were people there that had worked. I mean, there were people that place had been around for a while. And there were people who worked at that Bob Evans who had been with the company for going on 30 years. But when the bridge got washed out, understand, Bob Evans did not get flooded. Nothing structurally happened to the Bob Evans restaurant at Elkview, West Virginia. And it takes a goodly number of people to run a Bob Evans. Well, back on the 27th day of July, and again, I reiterate, no one at that Bob Evans was not unable to open because it was flooded or anything like that. It was a matter of access. And it was uncertain when the shopping center would be reopened. I mean, it wasn't going to be forever. But I have in front of me here a copy of a letter dated July the 27th, 2016, to one of the employees of that Bob Evans. And all the employees of that Bob Evans got one of these letters. And it reads as follows. As you know, the Bob Evans restaurant located in Elkview, West Virginia, has been closed since the floods on June 23rd, 2016. Due to circumstances beyond our control, Bob Evans has no certain future reopening date for this restaurant and therefore must terminate your employment with Bob Evans effective August 1, 2016. You know, yesterday. Benefits and remuneration of any kind, including bonus plans, life insurance, long-term disability insurance, and perquisites, shall terminate effective on August the 1st, 2016. Except medical and dental insurance coverage, including flexible spending account and employee assistance program access, if any, which will terminate on August 31st, 2016, to any vested rights employee may have in Bob Evans 401k retirement plan. For health and welfare information, call blah, blah, blah. Bob Evans, who is dead, Bob Evans truly appreciates your professionalism and loyalty to the company. Without a doubt, we could not have successfully run the Elkview Bob Evans without your input and hard work. We hope you will consider applying for positions at other Bob Evans restaurants and wish you success in your future endeavors. Regards, Devra C. Cornell, PHR, SHRM, CP, Director of Human Resources and Talent Management, Devra, D-E-V-R-A, dot Cornell, C-O-R-N-E-L-L, at bobevans.com, area code 614-497-4328. That's what they got. That's what every employee inside that Bob Evans restaurant got. Because Bob Evans just wants to shut the hell down, and, you know, maybe they'll reopen when the bridge gets done. But they're not going to carry a bunch of dead weight human beings until they can get the store back up and running. Because that's not good business. And I'm sure everybody who still has jobs and homes and are able to pay their bills and have health care and things like that there at the home office of Bob Evans would agree. Gerald says, after all of this, I'm going to have to rethink my patronage of that particular corporation. I've done all my rethinking. I ain't gonna. I wasn't crazy about them in the first place. But now it's just that much easier not to go in. I thought about the misery, the hell that was Katrina. And I thought about how some of the restaurateurs, and of course the restaurant industry, the dining industry, the hospitality industry, is the heart and soul of New Orleans, reached out to other restaurants and even on a temporary basis tried to make sure that people could continue to work there, or, you know, outside New Orleans in the wake of Katrina. Now, Bob Evans has a blue million, bajillion, I don't know how many, other restaurants. This particular unit had maybe, I don't know, less than 100 employees, I'm sure. And instead of firing them, you know, maybe the immortal person that is the Bob Evans Corporation could have looked around and found temporary placement. Maybe they could have even dug deep and provided some housing assistance. Because that bridge is not going to be gone forever. And it was a successful and busy store. But, of course, it was a lot easier just to shit can all of those human beings, wasn't it? Of course it was. Ferg and I used to go over there from time to time for breakfast. They had a really great staff. I mean, the staff is what makes these chains. I mean, if the staff stinks, it doesn't matter how good the food. Well, the food's going to stink, too. But they had a really good staff over at the local Boo Evans. But when you walked in, there was a big sort of grainy-looking mural on the wall. It was sort of done in greenish, pale greenish tints, and it was sort of grainy like it was shot with, you know, ISO 1000 film in very, very low light. And I know, Asa, Brother Deacon Asa says, come on, Bob, housing assistance, that cuts into executive bonuses. What are you talking about? I know. Heresy. Because capitalism. But there's this photograph on the wall, and I've seen it in other Bob Evans. It shows an old coot in a hat that one is supposed to presume is the Bob Evans. And it says, Bob Evans always said to treat strangers like friends and friends like family. And I remember looking at Ferk and go and saying, son, what does that mean they treat family like? And he laughed, and I laughed, and we found out. Well, I mean, we didn't find out, but the people who worked at that Elkview Bob Evans damn sure did. They treat family like shit. So I posted all of that because a woman named Jamie posted her thoughts and her termination after having given almost 10 years to that Bob Evans restaurant. And in West Virginia, there's just not a hell of a lot of jobs going around. And if you're diligent enough and conscientious enough to hold down the same job for 10 years, the same damn difficult job for 10 years, yeah, maybe, you know, you can find something somewhere else, miles and miles and miles away. I mean, Kmart there in Elkview has full employment. I'm sure the Kroger's is pretty well staffed. There's no Wally World to be abused at. But I thought it was kind of interesting because I tweeted it out and said, you know, I'll never spend another dime there. And then suddenly, lo and behold, as if from nowhere, comes a series of tweets from at Bob Evans Farms. Now, did you hear anything in there about, I mean, they said encouraged to apply at other Bob Evans. That's not the same thing as we will take care of you. Or we will try to, being as how you worked at a store that was part of a 1,000-year devastating flood, Bob Evans cares about its family members and will see to it that there's something there for you at another store. Maybe we'll help you with some relocation, blah, 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 blah. No, hell no. They're encouraged to apply at other. So, lo and behold, here comes the, at Bob Kincaid, any employees affected by this closure are encouraged to contact us directly to be transferred to another location. Thank you. At this time, we are working to ensure all Elkview employees affected by the recent floods can transfer to another location. Huh. How about that? They're encouraged to contact Bob Evans directly. Huh. Interestingly enough, Devra R. Cornell Shrimpkoop somehow managed to contact each and every one of those employees directly, and there was nothing. You know, it's moments like this, and in moments like this, I'm grateful for friends of the program like the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas, Stan, who specializes in business ethics, for the guidance that she provides along the way. I don't understand how that letter got out the door. Do you? Did she just run it past the accounting department and the accountants all said, well, yeah, that's true. That's good. Yeah, shit can them all because, you know, that that might affect the CEO's Christmas bonus and we like to keep him happy. But it got out the door. This is cute. When Devra C. Cornell Shrimpkoop signed off, it was regards, Devra C. Cornell. Not even best regards. Just crummy old, plain old, shitty regards. Whatever regards I got, you're welcome to them. However they are, good, bad, indifferent, mostly indifferent. Regards, Devra C. Cornell. She wrote that. She's their HR specialist. Why does she still have a job? Maybe she needs to find out what it feels like to be somebody who's got 10, 20, 30 years with the company and just gets unceremoniously dumped on their ass because of a 1,000-year flood for which, you know, the person was in no wise responsible. But that's how it goes in Merca. The greatest country in the history of the world on earth today, now, forever, in the universe, under God, hallelujah, amen. Because, well, I mean, we don't want the government interfering with free enterprise's ability to just the living daylights out of working people over something like a flood, now, do we? I mean, that'd be like socialism or something. I mean, that's those damned employees at Elkview, they just must want free stuff. So until I see an announcement that Bob Evans has bent over backwards and maybe even lost a millionth of a percentage point on its quarterly earnings, taking care of its Elkview employees instead of simply, you know, shitting on their heads. No more Bob Evans. No more Bob Evans. And there are parts of the country that Bob Evans has not yet infected, I mean, expanded into. And while I said earlier, I'm not your leader, and I'm not, but I don't feel like it's trying to lead if I just simply say that so-called consumer choices are actually ethical choices. In a capitalist system, what we do with our wallets is the nearest thing that we can come to manifestations of our personal ethics. And I will suggest that if you walk into a Bob Evans, knowing what we know now, that you're kind of siding with Bob Evans. Yes, yes, I know there are other people working for Bob Evans, but you're not going to put him out of business. Places like Bob Evans live and die by positive PR. You know, you don't need to go onto Yelp and post that the Bob Evans in your local town has, you know, roaches the size of house cats running around the kitchen. You don't need to do that. It's just a matter of community building. Now, are you going to have any luck with a Trumpanzee? I don't know.
Well, you know, it's free market and they got to make a profit. And sometimes people just have to suck it up, Buttercup.
Yeah, me too. Gerald says, hey, I want free stuff. Sign me up. Yeah, no kidding. There's no free stuff. This is not Denmark. And, you know, maybe you just can't live without those little hockey pucks that pass for biscuits at Bob Evans and the butter that they bring you that's hard as a damn brick and will tear the living hell out of that soft, warm bread out of the oven. Gerald and I went over the whole ice-cold, near-frozen, hard butter brought to the table thing. We did that last week. Yeah. But I felt like that was a story that merited Titanic Tuesday attention. Because I have no doubt that the executive leadership class of the Boob Evans family of restaurants, I have no doubt whatsoever that they're Republicans. I mean, come on, please. And sometimes these things just happen. And people have to find their own way. Yeah, Gerald confirmed my... That's the place, hard butter and all. As a matter of fact, it was the Bob Evans in Frostburg, Maryland. Yeah. So that's, you know, that's one of the things that we've got to work with for the evening. And there are, of course, many more. Many, many more. Now, as we near the close of the filibobster, I'll open up the phone lines. You know the numbers, right? 304-663-4676. That's the stress line. 304-663-HORN, H-O-R-N. The other line, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. And then Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet. Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. And that gets you into the program. Email works too. Bob Kincaid, same spelling, at gmail.com. On Twitter, at Bob Kincaid. Bob Kincaid on Facebook. That's pretty much it. I mean, you can also stand out on the back stoop and yell, but I've got headphones on. There's no guarantee that I'll hear you. Not for want of listening, though. Now, it being Tuesday, this second day of August 2016, we have the Green News Report on the way from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. They always do a lovely job. And I will be looking forward to that. I hope you do, too. And maybe a little bit of analysis of a couple of pieces I read earlier today that I found interesting. That's all on the way. As well as your calls. Oh, that's interesting. As we head toward the top of the hour break, Steve in New York, who is actually a native Ohioan, says, Bob Evans was the campaign chairman of a GOP congressman I worked for from Southern Ohio in 1996. I talked to Bob once on the phone. Brushes with greatness. Yes. And just sort of looking around for something to bump out with. No, nothing there. Sometimes. None of that really speaks to me. Ah, come on, we gotta have something enjoyable. Nah, not really. Ah, come on. You'd think there would be more options. Yeah, why not? Okay, so there's our break. Your calls when we come back. Again, this is listener-supported conversation radio. Try to raise $200 every evening. And as of now, 1 minute before 7 p.m. in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, you know, we're at zero. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You'll say we've got nothing in common, no common ground to start from, and we're falling apart. you'll say the world has come between us, our lives have come between us, still I know you just don't care. And I said, what about breakfast at Tiffany's? She said, I think I remember the film, and as I recall, I think we both kinda liked it. And I said, well, that's the one thing we got. Falling apart. You'll say the world has come between us, our lives have come between us, still I know you just don't care. And I said, what about breakfast at Tiffany's? She said, I think I remember the film, and as I recall, my thing, we both kinda liked it. And I said, well, that's the one thing we got. She said, I think I remember the film, and as I recall, I think we both kinda liked it. And I said, well, that's the one thing we got.
It's Tuesday, August 2nd, 2016.
This election is about climate change, the great environmental crisis facing our planet.
I believe in science.
Democrats make the case for action on climate change and clean energy jobs at the Democratic National Convention.
Trump says global warming is a hoax. I say Trump is a fraud.
While smacking Republicans and Donald Trump for denying science. Plus,
death and devastation. A half foot of rain in just 2 hours in central Maryland.
Another deadly extreme rainfall event hits the U.S., this time in Maryland.
All of those deadly events and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I've never seen such devastation.
It's really what they call an act of God. Unbelievable.
Actually, as it turns out, it's an act of man. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I know you have a lot to catch up with us on concerning the Democratic National Convention now completed in Philadelphia. But before that, an act of man, not God, has once again struck in these United States when it comes to the climate.
Yes, historic rainfall and flooding in Ellicott, Maryland killed two people over the weekend. The historic rainfall event illustrates the increasing trend toward more frequent and intense extreme rainfall events as the planet warms. The National Weather Service said that at one point, the localized severe storm dumped over an inch of rain in just 10 minutes. This is consistent with what scientists have predicted with a warming atmosphere.
There has been a lot of consistency in that regard of late, and none of it is good news.
Nope. But at least at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia last week, climate change finally became prominent as one of the many issues highlighted at the convention. Unlike the Republican convention, where climate science was barely mentioned and then only for ridicule, Democrats like former Maryland governor and former Democratic candidate for president Martin O'Malley criticized the Republican Party's climate science denial and made the economic case that climate action will generate a clean energy jobs boom.
Climate change is not only a real threat, it's also the greatest job creation opportunity to come to the United States in 100 years.
California Governor Jerry Brown dismantled the Republicans' false claims about the cost of climate action by pointing to California's enormous economic success, even while increasing clean air and water standards and putting a price on carbon emissions.
We're proving that even with the toughest climate laws in the country, our economy in California is growing faster than almost any nation in the whole world.
We should note, however, that Governor Brown and the Democratic Party Platform Committee have rejected calls from climate activists to ban fracking, which has helped natural gas displace coal in the U.S., but is linked to water contamination and higher methane emissions. Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, Hillary Clinton's former competitor in the race, highlighted the necessity of appointing Supreme Court justices who will uphold the government's authority to protect the environment, and he focused on the need for speed in transitioning to clean energy as a moral imperative.
Unless we act boldly to transform our energy system in the very near future, there will be more drought, more floods, more acidification of the oceans, more rising sea levels.
Now, that was likely the first time that the words ocean acidification were ever uttered in a presidential convention. In accepting the Democratic Party's nomination, Hillary Clinton drew sharp contrasts with the Republicans and their nominee, Donald Trump.
I believe in science. I believe climate change is real, and that we could save our planet while creating millions of good-paying clean energy jobs.
So the Democrats constantly mentioned climate change action. That's a big improvement over previous presidential campaigns and conventions, but with few policy specifics. And they really kind of lacked emphasis on the scale and the speed needed to avoid catastrophic global warming. Now, studies show that the voting public grasps a problem really only when politicians and the media talk about it repeatedly and with urgency. Climate scientists say that the window of opportunity is closing, and the important decisions to avoid dangerous warming must be made in the next 4 to 8 years.
Well, to your credit, Desi Doyen, you have been talking about it repeatedly and with urgency for many years. At least it seems like a lot of people are finally beginning to listen. Whether it's too late or not, we'll find out. Striking difference, whether the Democrats were specific or not, between the two different parties' conventions. Thank you for drawing that contrast. For much more on all of our stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
One of these things is not like the others. Which one is different? Do you know? Can you tell which thing is not like the others? I'll tell you if it is so.
Everybody sing. 10 minutes past the hour. Hour number two of this Titanic Tuesday is underway. And let's run over to the stress line and see what Matthias in Tennessee has for us. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. So I wanted to call in and give a defense for you were talking about the Bernie delegates booing Bernie at the convention. So I'm actually an Ohio delegate. And what really went on in that room was you were hearing, we want you, we want you. There was actually chants behind it, and they were very loud, and it was overwhelming. But it was just a kind of, you know, an explosion of disappointment because he's really telling us to get behind Hillary. And, you know, even though in our hearts, most of us know that that's probably ultimately the truth, it was just, you know, it was hard medicine to take. And so
no, it's hard. I mean, it was heartbreaking to watch.
Well, indeed, but I wouldn't say that they were actually booing. I because from my experience, and including the walkout, because I'm one of the ones that walked out, Bernie was our entire method. We were not abandoning Bernie. We were just trying to actually take him where he needed, where, you know, we're not ready to get behind Clinton yet, right? You know, we believe that he's probably right in the long run, but we still want to make sure that we're pushing her. Where I actually found most of the dissent is honestly on the picket line. And I can't verify this or validate it with numbers, but I would venture to say most of these people that have turned on Bernie and have gone this crybaby betrayal route, especially those that are kind of jumping towards Jill Stein, is, oh, shit, I lost my train of thought. I think the ones that don't have skin in the game, right? You know, they're not the delegates like us that did all the canvassing and the hard work to make sure that was working on the ground when the campaign staff came in, and the ones that volunteered and put in hours, and you know, they're mean folks who didn't get who they expected us. Look at what we accomplished, right? On our first go, we were able to plant a progressive flag in the Democratic Party.
Well, damn straight. I mean, look at the. I understand that, you know, we want it all. You know, when do we want it? Now. What do we want? All of it. When do we want it? Now. I get that. But it seldom works that way in the American political system. I think you'll probably agree. And what was accomplished,
exactly.
And what was accomplished was breathtaking. I mean, we've had the superdelegate system since after the 1972 election, right? And
right.
In 1 year, two-thirds of them are gone by 2020. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's about right. I mean, you have neoliberalism came in and just decimated the progressive caucus of the party. You know, the new Democrat, Bill Clinton, thank you very much.
Yeah. But I mean, that's a huge accomplishment. The platform positions... And I know people say, well, you know, candidates just ignore the platform. Well, candidates ignore the platform if they are allowed to ignore the platform. Isn't that the responsibility of the voters and the activists and the grassroots folks?
Well, I totally agree with you. I think my point was that I just wanted to make sure that, you know, this wasn't a moment where the delegates actually turned on Bernie. The delegates were just having a moment of emotional catharsis because it was, we finally had to deal with the fact that he wasn't going to be our nominee. Where I've seen the dissent is on the outside, and I'll tell you what, Jill Stein personally insulted me. Like, I was getting ready to, you know, kind of ramp up. Be great to get her on stage, keep the conversation much more broad. If she's on stage, Gary Johnson will obviously also be on stage. And then, you know, she just fumbled. You know, she had all of Bernie's delegates in one place, wasn't going to have another opportunity for this. And then a large portion of them walked out. So, you know, if you're going to be a real organization, you need to know where to find your resources. You can't just be on picket lines screaming and shouting and not really, you know, working with the people. So she had us go to this one event, which ended up being sponsored by Socialist Convergence. It wasn't even a Green Party event. And I ended up finding out that it was actually a workshop for a bunch of anarchist groups to try and buy a little time on Jill's ear. And while there was a Bernie representative, they had Chris Hedges get up there. And she grabbed, and I would say two-thirds of the crowd were actually Bernie support. The rest of them were the anarchists having their little powwow. So they put Chris Hedges up there to do his I told you so, wasn't I a soothsayer back in February, even though Bernie's done everything he said he was going to do. And through this there were boos. I didn't actually hear it because I wasn't interested in the workshop. I wanted to hear Jill Stein, but I was out being interviewed for a documentary, but I had a woman come out scream at me, how dare you, you know, and I knew Chris Hedges' work, so I knew exactly what happened in there, and I'm like, are you kidding me? And so I guess there was a limp-wristed defense of Bernie, but she just left that on the floor. And so you're now pissing people off. And then the delegates that were there, they tried to collect us up kind of haphazard with no real guidance. And I didn't realize that this was being a socialist convergence thing, that they had no control. The Green Party had no control of what was going on. And I thought, okay, great. We're going to get to meet with Jill Stein. Nope, she had something to do, which I take to mean she had to run back down to the picket line because Obama was speaking that night. And her inept campaign manager, who's apparently also her foreign affairs advisor, spouted some directions at one of my other Ohio delegates to give to the rest of us. And she wanted us to organize a protest on the floor of the convention hall when Hillary Clinton was giving her speech. And I was like, how dare you? How dare you? You don't even meet with us so that we can learn how we're going to collaborate on our work. You're just going to try and ride our backs. You know, this is our blood, sweat, and tears. The fact that Bernie delegates are sitting here, this is the risk of our credentials and in many places, you know, our party standing, and we came to reach out to you, and you're just going to bark orders at us? How is that any different than Hillary Clinton? So I'm in a big fuck you moment with Jill Stein right now.
Well, I can understand it, and you're not alone. The Jill Stein Wi-Fi story last night just kind of went, what?
That one just made me think she's cuckoo. So before I was kind of like interested in having her on stage, but you know, how can you like put cuckoo for cocoa puffs out there and say that you're going to call that a presidential nominee?
And yes, you know, I realize she's not an anti-vaxxer per se, but the thing was it Colin Malloy from the Decemberists pointed out? She tweeted out, "There's no evidence suggesting vaccines cause autism," and pulled that, and then tweeted it again as, "I'm aware of no evidence." You know, just so she could keep a hand in with the weirdo freako anti-vaxxers. I'm sorry, that shows a real want of anything generally resembling integrity. And this is coming from somebody who, at least on a state level, I've voted for green candidates in the past here in West Virginia. So I'm not completely averse to the idea.
No, I totally agree. But, you know, I think a lot of people are upset at Bernie because of what's going on, and they're upset at the situation, and there's plenty to be upset about. But I think it's time that we do move on. The presidency was only kind of secondary to the mission of getting the revolution started, right? Because he was starting to awaken the progressive movement that has been silent for well over a generation now. And he mobilized that within 15 months. And that is a major accomplishment. And we have to.
It's tremendous. And I mean no disrespect in saying this. I hope you understand. Bernie's a 74-year-old guy. Were people expecting that he was just going to lead the parade for another 26 years?
Oh, exactly. And, you know, he's trying to build neither. So all of these people dogging Bernie, I can't get behind it. You have to trust him. He has a stump still in the Senate, and he's going to go back a powerful, more powerful senator. And he was indebted to protect the political capital that we've gained in this fight over the primary. The concessions he made were not, you know, he's a shrewd politician. You can't, you know, politics is the art of compromise. And that's the problem with a lot of, like, third-party and idealist type of politics. They're so fragile. They're so brittle. that they can't have the flexibility to, yeah, you kind of got to concede a few things maybe from time to time to play your broader political project. And that's what Bernie has done from day one. And he's still going to be a leader. He's still going to be a one where he said, hey, guess what? We got Hillary to say that she's going to do this, that, and the other thing, and she's not doing it. I need a million people on the mall right now. And that's where the movement is. That's where, you know, we started at the top to beacon, get the people awake again, but we still got to do the work at the bottom, just like the Green Party does.
They well, yeah, there's there you can't you cannot build an edifice from the apex down. It has to be built from the base up. And just as a just as an example of real world stuff that people might find interesting. I've got an example here from the Democratic Party platform. You might find this interesting. You know, I've spent a lot of time in opposing mountaintop removal in Appalachia because of its toxic effects on human life.
I'm right there with you. Actually, I did some research in eastern Kentucky. I have a doctorate in geography, and I did queer research on gay life in rural Appalachia. And trust me, I'm right there with you on mountaintop removal. It's a horrible, horrible thing.
Okay, so dig this. This is a direct quote from the Democratic platform. The fight against climate change must not leave any community out or behind, including the coal communities who kept America's lights on for generations. Democrats will fight to make sure these workers and their families get the benefits they have earned and the respect they deserve, and we will make new investments in energy-producing communities to help create jobs and build a brighter and more resilient economic future, period. But then this. We will also oppose threats to the public health of these communities from harmful and dangerous extraction practices like mountaintop removal mining operations.
Uh-huh.
You know why that's in there? That last sentence, you know why that's in there?
How's that?
It's in there because someone from Bernie's staff was able to give like a two-minute presentation to the platform committee, and they focused on mountaintop removal, and Bernie's people are why that is in the Democratic Party platform when it has never been so much as mentioned before.
And that's amazing. And that's amazing. And we did that. And we have to be proud of that. You know what I've been thinking? I've been saying this for a few months now. There's proof that if you take away, you adjust for subsidies, that large-scale solar farming and wind have met economic parity, and actually they're exceeding it. So it's cheaper to the consumer, it's cheaper to produce, and it would create all these jobs. That what would be a perfect place to set up solar panel farms on the stars to the earth that now lay naked to the sky, and the jobs that could bring to the region.
Yeah, I mean it does. There can be a fix. But there needs, you having worked in this region, you know, there has got to be something on the order of an Appalachian Marshall Plan. It can't be done by half measures, and it also can't be done. And I'm not trying to be a jerk here, but it can't be done by focusing only on the poor miners. Yes, they're having a hard time of it, but guess what? So is everybody else.
Yes. Well, and you know what? I advocate a politics of equity. I'm not big into equality. I mean, I get the equality thing, and we've got great strides by it, but it's identity politics. We need equity. Do you want to know how to solve racism? You make everybody have a stable life where they've got health care, a job, they've got a future because they can save for a future, you know, for retirement. If you make people's lives stable, then they don't have to be afraid of everybody, you know, because then the people that are telling them the reason you're down is because of the brown person, the reason you're down is because of the black person, and scaring everybody, illegal immigrants, Muslims, this, that, and the other thing. People have the tendency, and there's actually sociological studies on this, that when because people have, we've been wondering as social scientists, why do people vote against their economic interests? When the economy is down, people have the tendency to, I think it's a natural sort of human tribal kind of mentality. It comes, I think, it's first out of that. But they have the tendency to fall back to religion and get entrenched in it. And that's where the, you know, the diverges kind of happen, and we get these sort of racial politics. But if people don't have to worry about putting food in their stomach, they're far more able to accept new ideas because they're not finding themselves having to fight or flight kind of sort of mentality that brewed up the Republicans.
Well, I think you're right, and I've run across the concept of equity versus equality a couple of times. And there's a lot to recommend that because it's financial disparities that the origins of racism per se in the Americas, colonialism, don't they arise from the essential need of the wealth class to separate the poor classes into groups that would be at each other's throats so as to keep them away from their own?
Well, and that's exactly what the Tea Party was, right? You know, there was a little bit of a grassroots thing going on there because they were able to take over the party and the Republican Party from the inside. But the Koch brothers saw it as an opportunity to create a beard, to create a front, a nice little curtain that they could pull their shenanigans behind by basically drumming up racism. And the thing about it is what they don't realize is that at a certain point, the grassroots of the Tea Party started to smell that. And Donald Trump is their Frankenstein. Right? That is the result of people that were expecting, you know, however misguided their interpretations of the Constitution were, they were expecting some kind of equity at the end of their politics. And when they didn't get it, they kind of realized it. And Donald Trump was able to maximize on the fear, the xenophobia, the racism, everything, because they'd already been geared up for that. They were already looking for
that. That pump was primed.
Okay.
I said that pump was primed. They were ready. It was a message they were ready for. And you know, there's an. I take a previous warning about you throwing around the word fascism to heart, but that's kind of the way that works, isn't it? I tell you what, I would love at another time maybe when you've got the time to go into it, and I'm a little bit better versed. I would love to hear more about what you mentioned about some of your research in Eastern Kentucky, because the topic, the way you framed it is a dynamic entirely unto itself, and it's we don't talk about that here, but but it is so here.
Well, and the thing about it is, and what I tried to actually do in my research, a large part of it was a discourse analysis critiquing the gay community itself. But there's actually a neoliberal gay community that is equally normalizing as any sort of heterosexual normativity or white privilege, that there is a sense of privilege of being in the city. And the politics that burns out is either, you know, the country is seen as a place where queers go to die. And their only political possibility is to move to the city, where they're equally alienated because their ruralness brings them back to this place that is kind of, you know, seen as evil. So they're a figure without places. But at the same time, there's such incredible nuance. So my problem was, you know, I was trying to break that down, look at where the power structure was, and the kind of political thing it stopped. You know, it was, but at the same time, kind of look at the just sort of the quotidian lives of queer people. Yeah, there's a lot of homophobia, and it's bad. But people still live their lives at the end of the day. You know, we find joy in our own crises. And
that may be the takeaway line of the evening. It's not a ha ha knee slapper cowbell ringer. But did you say we take joy in our own crises?
Well, and what I mean by that is that we're all under oppression, right? You know, we all have the things that create disadvantages for us, even though that they're, you know, also mixed with different privileges too, right? but we still live our lives in those conditions, right? We still have moments where we can laugh, and we still have moments where we create connections, because if we don't, we go insane and we die. Right. So even though that we if we focus too much on disparity, then we also don't look at the creative ways in which people create Lives on the Fringe. And I just find that more interesting.
I find that fascinating, and that's probably an hour's conversation. I think about people that I know around here, who you just described them exactly, and I don't want to use any names because it wouldn't be fair. I mean, they're my friends, my neighbors. I don't know how out they are, that kind of thing. But they find it's like a seed growing into a plant in stony soil.
Yeah.
It ain't very easy to do, but if the plant survives, it's going to be a hardy little critter.
Well, you know, and that's so very, very true. I'm trying to remember the French writer who, you know, basically had, I can't remember his name, but, you know, his was, you know, you become who you become out of the struggles in which you go through to become that person, right? And so the people are strong, the people that go through more struggle have the tendency to end up being the stronger people at the end of the day.
Forged in the fire.
Mm-hmm.
That is conceptually amazing. Well, I think it's worthy, like I said, worthy of a lot of conversation, Matthias. And I really appreciate everything you brought to this call this evening, because this is the heart and soul of how conversation radio works. And it's moments like this, you know, they're little lanyaps, I guess, you know, unlooked for little gifts that just make the evening, and I can't say enough for what you brought to the table this evening.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm actually really proud. And I would love to come back on and have a conversation about this. I actually found out I sort of fell out of academia, and that's a long story we could save for later, but I met up with my dissertation advisor about a year ago or so, and I found out that it's actually being taught by one of the people I cite rather heavily in Seattle once a year, so I'm also being encouraged to adapt it for a book. But since I've got everybody's ear, I'm going to plug one more thing. I am actually a contributor to Tom Reynolds' show, Sunday on FYI Nation, but I just started my own show.
Sunday was
our first episode, but it's called Work in Progress, and it's me and my friend Clint, who is also... he was a PhD student that I met. He was in philosophy. I was in human geography. And so we're calling ourselves the Recovering Academics, and we're doing a little sort of Marxist academic-y look at, you know, politics and whatnot.
There's a significant portion of the Horn Family Community Congregation whose little pink ears just went up and said, "What?" There's more going on in that realm of thought than most people realize. Go ahead.
No. I'll let you finish your thought.
I was just going to say we have among other things, among other people, not things. We've got a dear friend, Faith, who is a Marxist academic. And I learned a beautiful thing from her. She had a Lenin quote the other day, and I can't remember it exactly, but it was in response to the purity folks, who, you know, well, you know, if we can't have Jill Stein, then by God, you know, the next best thing is Donald Trump and bring the revolution.
Right.
And it was and the Lenin quote was, if the liberals offer me two seats instead of three at the table, I'm not going to walk away and take none. And
yeah.
I thought, I mean, say what you will about Lenin, but that's just good strategy.
Yeah, I think the biggest, well, I mean, state scientific socialism, as they call it, state communism, was ultimately doomed to fail, but I think its biggest hit was Lenin dying before he was ever actually, because he was the philosopher of the two, right? Stalin was the militarist, and so once he got power, he turned the state. But Marx actually, the state was supposed to dissolve. If you read some of his other interpretations, Gramsci especially, the idea that
the you had to seize the state to create the moment where you could distribute the equity, and then the state was supposed to basically dissolve into a kind of proletariat utopia. The problem is that the state is a consolidated power. We know the power corrupts. They say power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely, that kind of thing.
And it, but it's a fascinating and worthy field of study, and it's a pity that it is so so demonized that the mere mention of Marx you can't keep a job teaching high school doing that unless your mention of Marx is and Marx was the devil. I mean,
right.
There's a hell of a lot more.
Well, there actually is. And the thing about Marx is, we actually kind of academically, we say a post-Marxist, right? Analysis of things, which means that there was a lot to criticize about Marx, but every philosophy moves forward by critique and addition. But a lot of there's been a lot of different critiques over the years of leading up to feminist critiques, and so there's a lot of new ways in which Marx is being used that are fascinating, because Marx was never really interested in identity politics, right? But they were necessary. Race, gender, now sexuality, as we move into the contemporary and these types of things, Marx wasn't interested in those. He believed everything was at the point of labor, right? And so equity alone, where new interpretations of how we can use Marx bring those other things into the conversation. And I think there are really interesting moments to look at and how we can shape our politics by them.
Absolutely. Well, Matthias, again, thank you very kindly, and thank you for reaching out to Thomas to find out how to reach the program. And tell people again about the new program.
Yeah, it's work in progress. Your academic, recovering academic, Clinton Matthias, and it's Sundays at 7 o'clock p.m. On FYI Nation.
Beautiful, Matthias. Thank you again. I look forward to our next conversation. I really, really do.
Definitely. Thank you. Me as well. You have a great night.
You too. Bye now. I really do. I wait all night for calls like those. And onward over to the other line, 304-574-8178. And Scott in San Diego. Hey, Scott.
Hello there, Bob. How are you?
I'm well. How's Punky?
Punky is fine. We're all dealing with the heat as best we can.
Another shitty day in San Diego, right?
No, actually, it's lovely here. It's just sometimes it gets a little hotter than I can dance with,
Well, no, I was being facetious. I mean...
But there's a couple of things I wanted to address this evening, but I one thing I need to go back to is toward the end of the show last night, you were apparently reading a communication from someone.
That's Todd in Maryland.
Okay. Well, Todd in Maryland basically invoked my name and I think Tracy's name and a couple other people's name, but I couldn't get my head around what his complaint was. Can you refresh me or fill in a blank or two for me?
Let me see if I can find it.
Okay.
Let's see here. I think I'm going to have to do this the hard way. There's going to be some serious scrolling going on. Working. See, I don't just throw emails away.
Yeah, but I know how they get lost in the shuffle, man. I tell you, you could go absolutely bonkers trying to find something that you know is in your inbox, but you can't quite put your finger on exactly
where. There it is. Okay, let me find you the quote.
Okay.
And Bob, you call all of us real conspiracy theorists when we questioned the Democratic primary for Iowa with the coin tosses to California with the millions of the uncounted provisional ballots, but where was Scott in San Diego, Tracy in the Valley, and Rick, not that billable, who basically regurgitates what he heard on the Norman Goldman show? I don't know what that means either.
Well, first of all, I think I've listened to Norman Goldman maybe half a dozen times.
Well, no, no. That was directed at Rick. So.
Oh, okay. Well, fine. But I guess what Todd is asking is, where were we California folks after the California primary back in June, with the provisional ballots not getting counted correctly? Is that pretty much the essence of it?
If there's an essence to be had, yes.
All right. Well, we were right here waiting for them to count the votes. I mean, I don't have a better answer than that. But to be frank, when you were reading it yesterday, I didn't catch the part about the provisional ballots. But I did get a strong sense that he was somehow impugning my credentials as an upright liberal person.
Well, I mean, I was told that the program leads from behind, when, you know, we never set out to lead anything in the first place.
Okay.
I mean, I get the idea that the email was written in great frustration and or anger. And there's a lot of that in the Bernie or bust movement, or the Never Hillary movement, or whatever they're calling themselves. And I understand it. Jesus Christ, I was furious as I watched the dummied up vote count. But even without the dummying up, she still wins, okay?
Yeah.
That was part of what was so icky about it, was that she wasn't happy winning narrowly. Somebody, you know, one of those multi-millionaire campaign consultants told her, no, this has to be a convincing victory. You can't leave them any, blah, blah, blah. You know what? I disagree, Scott. I think if it had been a pledged delegate count first, then she probably still would have won. She still would have won. Okay, and it would have. And you know what Bernie said is true. You know, we fought the good fight. We just didn't quite make it over the finish line first, and. There's a certain honor. I mean, if you're the number 20, me and my sports analogies, if you're the number 47 college football team in the country and you play number one and the spread is 49 points and they actually manage and they actually win by three. Yeah, they don't put moral victories in the W column, but you can come away from that and build on it to go and deal with the rest of your season. Because you're actually better, or you're better than anyone thought, or they're worse than anyone predicted. But you got something to build on. And a moral victory is valuable within the scope of what Matthias was talking about a moment ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. Now, one other thing, and then I'll move on to whatever's next. Along the way, in that message from Todd, there was reference to the coal that in the program that's not been posted, and you dismissed that coal as an example of, I believe you said, not good radio, something along those lines.
Yeah, I don't even care to talk about it anymore, frankly.
Okay, well, the point I was making very quickly was, I thought it was exquisite, because there are callers to some shows for whom nothing is enough. It's like my maternal grandmother was a big one for this. If you got her a nylon scarf that was red, she would be disappointed because she wanted a silk scarf that was blue. Okay? It's like they are disappointment walking around on two legs, waiting for something else not to meet their expectations. And in the metaphysics of change, expectations. Well, there's two points in life where life and aliveness will break down. One of them is at the point of our expectations, and the other is at the point where we are not keeping our agreements. Now, in the realm of expectations, that is a non-reality. When you're speaking in terms of what you expect to happen, that takes you, A, out of the present moment, which is the only reality we've got, okay, on a momently basis. It takes us out of the present moment, but it also moves us into a realm of unreality, because what is, what ain't, ain't. Your expectations don't enter into it. Now, you can work and behave in a manner consistent with achieving the result that you want to have happen, but it's just very frustrating. And, you know, as far as that call goes, I mean, you more than likely did the right thing, because in all the time I've been listening, to hear him tell it, nothing works. You know, and that's just unreality in a nutshell, because a lot more works than doesn't work. It's just a matter of continuing to mend the equation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, be that as it may, Bob Evans, and then I'll let you go. I saw that post. I was glad that you posted it, and I reposted it and also added a comment on my own Facebook. There is something to be said for voting as a consumer with your feet and with your wallet. Years ago, there was a guy named Oliver North who was running for a Senate seat in my home Commonwealth of Virginia. This was around 1990 or so, 1992. And he was running as a Republican. I happened to be flipping through the channels one night, and there was a guy interviewing Jimmy Dean, the singer, who later went on to become a sausage magnate, okay? And he mentioned just in passing that for every roll of Jimmy Dean sausage that he sold, he was donating a nickel to the Oliver North campaign. And I said, my God. I mean, he's free to do it. His product is excellent, but it's not so excellent that I'm willing, one step removed, to be donating a nickel of my purchase price to the campaign for U.S. Senate of an asshat like Ollie North, okay?
Yeah.
And even before that, back in the late '80s, when Rush Limbaugh was first starting out on national radio, one of his big sponsors was Snapple. Now, I had had Snapple one or two times, and it's a fine product, but I refuse to patronize companies that would sponsor all of that crap that he pumps out, he being Rush Limbaugh. And some people say, well, you know, an ad agency and a company go where the audience is, and they don't really care who and what that audience is comprised of. They're going for the raw numbers. Well, that is also bullshit, because if they don't know and they don't care, that's a further indictment of their disconnect from what the hell's going on. So those are my two quick consumer stories.
And, you know, look, it's corporate America, Scott.
I know.
And the odds are that unless you want to live what would probably be a very short life of eating nothing but Ben and Jerry's ice cream, you really, really have to work to vote progressively with your wallet.
Well, actually, there's an app for that.
That's right, there is, isn't there?
Yeah, where you hold it up to the UPC on the package, and it gives you a rundown of who that company has invested money in as far as campaign contributions.
Yeah, but the problem is that'll triple your or quadruple your time in the grocery store, and you'll still come out with nothing but Ben and Jerry's in your basket.
Well, there may be an upside to that, because I happen to like Ben and Jerry's.
I do too, and there's Nancy's yogurt, and a few other things, but my point was that, you know, it is difficult to make those choices. And sometimes we find ourselves, and I know this won't play with the busters, but there are places where you go with the lesser evil. I mean, we are talking after all in your example about sausage, okay?
Yeah.
I believe it was Bismarck who said there are two things in the world you do not want to see made, and that's laws and sausage.
Exactly.
because they're both nasty, messy, greasy businesses. But that, you know, with that as an understanding, you do kind of look for lesser evils. I know, for instance, that my adored brand of delicious hickory smoked sausage, available in more than 20 states, none of which are West Virginia, which I get to enjoy once a year, that's made in Evergreen, Alabama. I'm pretty sure that the CEO ain't voting and didn't vote for Bernie.
Yeah, you think?
and so, you know, there are compromises all over the place. But to draw it back home to Bob Evans for a minute, we know that the nature of corporate employment is that you can be your ass can be slapped on the altar and your guts ripped out in the name of holy profit at any time, and that the contractual protections tend to run more toward the employer than toward the employee. We know that. But when you catch them, Scott, when you catch them behaving overtly in a ham-fisted fashion. Can't stay away from the pork analogies, can we?
No, I'm hungry for sausage.
Yeah, but when you catch it, you got to bust them.
Yeah.
Because they have to, an outfit like Bob Evans has to create, the whole idea when you walk in there, you know, it looks like a greatly expanded grandma's kitchen. And they bust their ass to make sure that it smells like fresh bacon bread from the moment they open the doors till the minute they lock them closed.
Oh, I know. I've been to Bob Evans.
So when you catch them giving the Abe Vigoda speech, you know, tell all those people we like them. It's only business.
Yeah.
You have to bust them.
Well, and that brings up a side issue, Bob. Isn't there a restaurant workers union? I know there's retail workers union. Isn't there a restaurant workers union? Is Ohio a right to work? Is West Virginia, I know, it's not a right to work state.
Oh, yes, we by God are.
Are you shitting me?
Yeah, of last January, Sunshine.
No.
Yeah, that's what the teabagging legislature brought us for after Christmas gift, alongside the freedom and liberty to shit our brains out after drinking raw milk.
So before they insisted upon union shops, but now it's right to work.
Well, the teabaggers didn't want a union shop.
Oh, I know.
But that's what they were put in there to do. They got rid of prevailing wage, and then they got rid of right to work. I mean, they imposed right to work.
Well, and see, that to have strong labor laws state by state is another layer of protection and insulation, where a company like Bob Evans can't just arbitrarily say, "Fuck all you all. Here's your letter. Let me tip my hat and wish you well on your way." You know.
Yeah.
I mean, I had my arguments with the two unions that I have worked under, Communication Workers of America back in the 70s and 80s, and AFTRA in the 80s and 90s. But when push came to shove, more often than not, I knew that they were looking out for me. Okay?
Well, yeah.
And workers...
I mean, like any other human institution... a union, a local or an international, is going to have a certain demographic amount of, you know, assholes.
Well, yeah, I know.
And because assholes are full of gas, for some reason or another, they have a way of rising. So, I mean, that's one of those don't throw the baby out with the bathwater kind of things.
Yeah.
So, I recognize, and there's really no data-driven way to say otherwise. If this country had 50% even union membership participation, this would be a dramatically stronger country. And it goes back to what Matthias was talking about. It would be a country where people would be less inclined to attack each other because everybody was getting close to their needs met.
Well, yeah, because when you're up to your ass in the daily angst of survival, you're only really thinking about yourself, not because you're bad or wrong, because you're not. That's just simply the situation you've been presented with, okay? And I don't know that union membership has ever been 50%. I know it was very high in the 50s and 60s even. But, yeah, I mean, to the extent that workers are protected and wages are equitable and working conditions are good, a lot of good stuff can happen, and that frees up a person to be a better citizen and even a better human being.
Yeah, yeah. And look at the modern transition. Do you remember the great bailout debate? When suddenly we found out that working stiffs all over America despised people who worked in the auto industry because they had a living wage. And instead of saying, gosh, I'd like to have a living wage too, gosh, I'd like to be able to go on vacation, gosh, I'd like to have health care, what do I need to do it? Well, what was their response? What words did they parrot from years of listening to Rush Limbaugh and Hannity and Fox and all of that, all of the other various and sundry filth that's been poured into the body politic over the last generation? Well, those union workers make too much. Why don't they have shit wages like I do?
Yeah. And what they were willing, what that mindset represents is an absolute willingness to not only decimate the auto industry in this country, but all the other mom-and-pop stores. I know the Republicans are all the time screaming about we got to take care of the mom-and-pop and the small business. Well, it would screw businesses in all 50 states right on down the line if we had let that happen to the auto industry in this country.
Well, yeah, there would have been a cascade effect that we'd probably still be feeling, and the American economy might well be in ashes by now. But remember, Bishop Willard Romney wanted to burn, baby, burn, because, you know, he didn't have an investment position in it. You know, F him. Really, F him.
Bingo, you're absolutely right, and I second that, and I think we should vote on it now.
All in favor?
Aye.
Indeed.
All right, man.
And I took note of Punky's vote too.
Yeah, he's off in the distance there, staying cool in the bathroom, talking to his buddy in the mirror. I know I've run over a number of topics, but it's always good to do that because it's a nice meeting of the minds, and we're working our way to a better world on this program. A lot of people may not realize it, but I have a feeling that is what we're up to.
I'd like to think so. Or maybe working our way back to a better world.
Well, that too.
I don't want to go back to the time when gay people lived in closets and we had the step off rule and the eyeball rule for God damn no, and yeah. Women were barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen. No, but back to a world where people had a living wage? Yeah. I mean, that's the reason that I kept bringing up time after time after time when we would talk about the fight for 15. I guess I'm just a radical, Scott. I don't want a $15 an hour minimum wage. I want a $20 an hour minimum wage because that was the minimum wage in 1960.
Well, hell, in the late 80s and into the very early 90s, I was making like, God, 18 bucks an hour, as I recall, playing records and running my mouth at a union shop radio station in the Midwest. On the weekend, a part-timer, mind you. And that was what? 1988 to 1990 is what it was. However long ago that was, going nigh under 20 years ago. More than 20, isn't it? I don't know. My brain is fried with numbers today.
Yeah, believe you me, I understand.
All right, man. Well, the conversation aspect of it is always part of the process, and it's all about either making it a better world or getting back to an even keel where we're at a better world and then making it even better. So you're right on that.
As long as we understand that I don't, make America great again. No. But
well, maybe this
shows why that slogan has resonance for some people. There was an America that was better than it is now for a certain segment of the American people. And that's inescapable.
Yeah, I understand the slogan. I just question the motives and the means from the guy who coined the slogan. Because Reagan had a similar slogan, and we see how well that played out for people.
Precisely. Indeed. Well, Scott, have yourself a wonderful afternoon and evening.
You too, Bob, and hello to all the fun lovers and truth seekers out in radio land. Keep up the good work.
Gonna try. Later. Bye now.
See ya. Bye-bye.
Our buddy Scott in San Diego and Scott's boss, Punky. Just a minute here. So here we are at about 3 minutes past the hour. And I think a break is probably in order. Just a second. Dadgummit, I can't find the damn thing. There's something, there's a perfect. Bumper for this. And I can't seem to find it. Damn it. Ah, you probably heard it anyway. No worries. So, both lines are open, well, all three lines, technically. 304-574-8178. If you call in on that one, the Skype's not available. If you call in on Skype, that number's not available. And then also 304-663-4673. A couple of emails from Steve of the Fraternity of Steve. Table manners, subject line. Bob Evans? Sounds like a tire dealership. How simple and sane it would be to provide a scheme of employee unemployment benefits for such natural disasters, just like the regular benefits already in place, half paid by the employer, half paid by the public fund. But since that's also a direct example of a socialist scheme, it's always better to continue with the all-powerful myth of individualism that pervades American culture. There's a fluid relation between the idea of this strong individualism and public anonymity. The person who is thrust back upon their own resources in a time of need is, in accordance with the philosophy, automatically consigned to the status of public autonomous existence. Cowboys are anonymous folk. It's pure bullshit, of course, but as any corporate gangster can attest, it's a great system. I heard something about business ethics in there somewhere. Since when in the USA has anything attached to academic pursuits been translated into useful policy or social need or human rights? Lately, anyway. Right-wing think tanks accepted. Well, yeah. On the topic of lesser evils in the grocery store that I brought up talking with Scott, a note from our buddy Michael in Madison. He said, I totally agree. Kind of riffed on the idea last week in a Facebook post. As citizens of an industrialized Western capitalist society, we all choose lesser evils on a daily basis. For you religious people, are you without sin? If so, write yourself in. Jesus. Also, a big shout out to Jesus. I didn't realize you followed me on social media. Why do people think their vote is so special and pure and sacred, yet they put gasoline in the car, go to their corporate job, cash their paycheck, use their smartphone made by Chinese slave labor, and get a factory farm burger from the poverty wage-paying drive-thru? Even Bernie is not without his faults. There is evil in the world everywhere and in everyone every day. Choosing the lesser evil is a daily fact of life. Pretending to be above it all for 5 minutes on one Tuesday in November every 4 years doesn't fool anybody. Anyway, all that being said, I liked Snapple as a kid for 15 minutes in the 90s, but I haven't purchased any since, and to this day I still won't, because they built their brand on Limbaugh's back fat. L! And I already hated Bob Evans, but now I'll make doubly sure never to ever patronize them. Hey, Michael. You live in Wisconsin. You've got the Norsky Nook. Never mind. These vote-with-my-wallet decisions probably won't impact much, and I'd never besmirch someone if Bob Evans was the only viable option for their next meal or their next job. However, there are just some places I ain't gonna go. It's not like the fate of the free world will be decided by my occasionally and stubbornly voting my conscience with my wallet. So I'll exercise that privilege. When I can. Exactly. I mean, isn't, to a certain extent, aren't places like Whole Foods and a couple of others, aren't they predicated on that very kind of thinking? That you'll pay more for organic, free-range, cruelty-free, gently killed, lovingly ground beef. And I'll never forget the one time I was in, I think it was a Wild Oats store at the time. They've been absorbed by, the Borg got them somewhere along the way. Maybe it was Walmart. I've seen Wild Oats brands in Walmart. But I saw $16 a pound frozen hamburger. And the first thing that came to my mind was, well, nobody on food stamps is shopping here. And that's the beautiful thing about the manipulation of the food stamp program or the SNAP benefits program, whatever. They make damn sure that the people who most desperately need that program in order to eat food can't be getting all moral or choosy or conscience-y in their decisions. See how capitalism works? You know, when it gets a little soupçon of socialism thrown in the form of EBT? Meanwhile, up in the humid north, not yet refrozen, Ron, packing his bags for a trip to the sandbox, writes, I still drive up old Highway 35 between Point Pleasant and Chillicothe, Ohio, on my way from West Virginia to the Dayton area. I can almost tell you the exact spot where the photo was taken of that old barn and the white fence that is seen in damn near all Bob Evans promotions. I'll be honest, I stopped going there years ago when I finally accepted that I wasn't going to get a beer with my burger for lunch. Call me petty, but these things matter. Yeah, but they want the family values crowd. And add into this, you know, I said that Ferg and I used to slip over for breakfast or whatever, and we made friends with a couple of the servers. And we were there on a Sunday one day, and we got there, you know, 10:30, whatever. And it was about 11:30. We're leaving. And all of a sudden, it was actually a little afternoon, because I looked, and all of a sudden the parking lot started filling up. And I looked at our server, and I said, "Oh, my God, it's the Baptists." And she, under her breath, she kind of went, "Oh, my God is right. These people are awful." I said, "Let me guess. Don't tip worth a damn." She said, "It's not a joke when I tell you that they really, really leave a dime by the coffee cup. Or a Bible verse written on the check." And I didn't doubt her. I did not doubt her in the least. So, you know, there's that. Big thanks. Big thanks going out to Steve from Georgistan and Karen and Cletus. We've only got $180 to raise for the remainder of the evening this evening. Thank you very kindly, Steve and Karen and Cletus. A little bit ago, Steve said, in regard to the, you know, I said, the assholes in every organization. Steve said, "It's the same scenario with the USPS. The knuckle-dragging anti-union goons still benefit from collective bargaining, even though they don't pay any dues. It's bullshit. Karen pays her dues and has been there for the last 20, and has been paying them for the last 20 years. She, we, can look at ourselves in the mirror every night. When I worked for Cox Communications, I paid my dues there as well." Yeah. Well, some people understand the concept of community. For some people, though, the right wing has been supremely successful. At making sure they don't. That's a fact. Can't find the damn thing. Oh, well. It's been around and around and around Facebook. It's a sort of trio, two women and a guy. And it's a take on Make America Great Again that's absolutely brilliant. And I'm damned if I can find it. Because God knows if you go into Facebook and you type in Make America Great Again, ugh, off to the swamp you go. What is it? So in Ashburn, Virginia, today, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini had himself a little rally. Now, this ain't funny. Get the hockey puck, just because there may be you may bother the neighbors with the oh my gods and the what the. First of all, T. Rump chucked a baby, a crying baby, out of his clavern. I mean rally. Yeah, Steve tells me that Cletus barked when I mentioned her name. True story, Steve says. Well, hi, Cletus. She's a good girl. That's a good girl, Cletus is. Oh, she's a good puppy. Sorry. Feel better in a minute. So there was a baby crying there at the rally. And I guess none of the political rules matter anymore. I mean, it used to be politicians were supposed to kiss babies. Not this asshat. Oh, hell no. He said, no, the baby crying, that's okay. And then a little bit later says, I was only kidding, you can get the baby out of here. But I love babies. I was only kidding. You can get the baby out of here. I think she really believed me that I like a baby crying while I'm speaking. Imagine that. The nominee of one of the two dominant political parties in the United States is afraid of being outwailed by a baby. It's where we are. It's 2016. It's second half of the second decade of the 21st century. No, I was kidding. Get the baby out of here. Somebody beat that baby up. I'll pay their legal fees. And when it comes to wailing and pissing and moaning, how can you tell which one's the baby and which one's Trump? So a little later, a little kid who wasn't a baby, who was, you know, up and speaking and, well, hey, able to yell, did not get thrown out. Because the little 10-year-old kid stood up and hollered in regard to Hillary Clinton, "Take the bitch down!" Really? It's sort of the Commonwealth of Virginia's answer to Stewie Griffin. Crooked Hillary,
Take the bitch down!
As one of the old school teachers who taught my kids often said, it all begins in the home.
Take that bitch down!
And when questioned about it, Mommy, dearest, said, well, children are children. He learned that kind of language in democratic schools. I think he has a right to speak what he wants to. Oh, isn't this kid going to be just a joy when he gets to learn some of the other fun words? Pam Kohler of Mount Vernon, Virginia. She was sitting in a group with media at the event. The media area.
Take that bitch down!
Wowzer. Hey, I must have conjured him. Look, it's Ron. Hey, Ron.
Well, hello, sir. How are you doing this evening?
Take that bitch down! I'm just dandy.
Well, there weren't any Anglo-Saxon action verbs involved, so perhaps...
Nor participles deriving from old German.
Yeah.
I think the verb would be fricken.
Well, you are far more intellectual in terms of ancient languages than I am, or even most modern ones. So I tell people up here that, yes, by God, I'm bilingual. When I showed up in Canada, I taught my first computer logic course and got rave reviews, and then the company sent me off for 6 weeks of elocution training. And that came back to me a couple of days ago with playing a round of golf.
Is that real?
That's real. Yay, barely, son. I swear to you. And I was playing golf with a guy in Canada Customs and Border Patrol. And he said, I got to tell you, you don't sound like you're from West Virginia, because I've been there. I've spoken to people from there, and you don't sound anything like them. So I told him the story. And he literally started laughing until he had tears in his eyes. He said, only in Canada would we do that. So, and I got $5 from him a little bit later. But, yep, that's a true story. So I will bow.
Did they talk, you know, walk and talk and act just like a blooming lady?
No, they taught me more to enunciate, which isn't a prevalent characteristic of West Virginia hillbilly language.
No, we just want to say the word and get them over with.
Yeah. Hey, y'all. And the other thing they managed to start me doing less of was speaking in metaphors and telling stories. I couldn't hit my ass with a banjo. That was a comment I made on the golf course yesterday. And apparently it elicited some humorous reactions from the people. Did you ever hear anybody say anything like that in your life?
Hey.
So it still comes out occasionally. But
I guess nobody up there has ever seen anybody looking at something like a cow looking at a new gate.
No. Or seeing driving behind somebody that got their driver's license by being able to hear thunder, see lightning, and eat ice cream.
That's always a good one.
And so, yeah, I said, it's a state.
To a remedy.
40 pounds and over.
There we go. You're back.
That's against the law.
I know.
40 and under, hide your chihuahuas and beagles. So, in any event, the point being, I enjoyed spreading the culture to those folks who have not had a chance to be exposed to it, and I take advantage of it at every opportunity, but never in a disparaging manner. So, and I've converted so many Canadian Scotch drinkers to bourbon when they discovered that...
You are an apostle.
This is just as good as some of that stuff I've been buying, whose names I can't pronounce, from places in Scotland I can't pronounce.
Lafroig.
And half the price. So.
Balvenie.
Yeah.
And is it Glenfiddich or Glenfiddich?
Fiddich.
You're sure of that?
Yep, I am. I've had guys in kilts correct me numerous times.
Okay. Yeah. But it's definitely Macallan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, what I wanted to chat with you about was sort of a interesting reaction on the part of most Canadians that I talked to of various political stripes that basically boils down to, do you believe the shit that's going on in the U.S. right now?
Those people have lost their tiny minds, eh?
And it's daily. I got people that in the office that I might speak to once a week who seek me out as a resident American going, can you explain this to me? And I'm going, no. A lot of angry white men who feel disadvantaged, and no matter what Trump says, they're going to support him. And a lot of liberals who are progressives who really don't like Hillary, but they're going to stifle their gag reflex and vote for her anyway, because they only got two choices.
So let me take a minute, Ron. Do they understand that up there? I mean, you've got proportional representation, right?
Mm-mm.
No?
No, we have a parliamentary system, winner takes all. In a given district, voting electoral district, if you want to call them that, precinct, you can have as many as 5 candidates, 6 or 7 running. Whoever gets the most votes wins, period. It opens the system up very much to split a guy you really don't like. It's a different sort of a system, but it works.
So hence my question. Do they understand that we have a two-party system down here and that a third party is never going to win the presidency?
No.
No?
No. They can't get your mind around that at all. It never comes up. The only thing they've ever heard is Democrats and Republicans.
Oh, so, I mean, Jill Wi-Fi Stein doesn't even exist up there.
No.
Or Gary Johnson.
Or does David Suzuki, who ran as a Green Party candidate. We've got one Green Party candidate in all of Canada, a lady by the name of Elizabeth May from British Columbia. And she is to the right, I would say, of the Green Party in the U.S., because she understands how things get done in Canada. She gets some media coverage. She has a seat in Parliament. The people who vote for her love her. She's going to win for as long as she wants to run. She just can't spread the movement outside of British Columbia.
Kind of like being an independent in Vermont.
Kind of like being a member of the Mountain Party.
Yes. No, because somebody's bound to. There's got to be a few people who like the Green Party in Canada.
Yeah.
The poor Mountain Party here. I mean, talk about it. Talk about there's a toxic brand.
There's a lot of people that like the Green Party in Canada. I got to tell you, I voted Green for damn near 10 years because I was in a riding where the liberal who was going to win either federally or provincially was going to get 80% of the vote. And I personally didn't like the individual, and I voted the individual, but I liked the person's people that ran for the Green Party, so I voted Green for years.
I love the vocabulary that we attach to these things. So in America, you run for election. In the United States, you run for election, because Canada is part of America, mm-hmm. too. In the United States, you run for election. In the UK, you stand for election. In the U.S., you have a district. But do you run or stand in Canada?
You stand.
But you stand while you're riding.
You stand in your riding, yes. Only. And
it's kind of like it's kind of like a wagon being dragged around the province.
Yeah, whoever wins the most wagons gets to lead the parade. And but the other point I wanted to make was Bernie. I think Hillary missed a bit of a bet. She could have picked Bernie as VP. I think Bernie would have taken it. Because Bernie going back into the Senate is going to go back to a lonely place where he's not going to be all that productive, because he pissed off a bunch of machine politicians. And
that may be, but given Senate demographics and Senate politics, they're going to need his independent vote if they're going to form any kind of a democratically controlled caucus, if they should be lucky enough to get one.
Yeah, they'll need his vote. But it's going to be an uphill slog for Bernie. It's going to be work. And you know, they'll come after him when it's convenient and ignore him the rest of the time. So I don't know what favors he's accrued through all of this. He is a voice. He does represent a strong, potentially long-term Democratic vote. But he pissed off a whole bunch of machine people in D.C., not just in the DNC, but in the donor community, and it's going to be tough for him.
Well, I mean, he's managed to get elected without Wall Street so far,
yep.
And he's not running for re-election.
Yet?
No, he's not running for re-election. He said he's done.
Really?
Yeah, he's going to serve out his term, and then spend more time with his family. But that's two more years.
Yeah.
And that's two more years of hell raising, and that's two more years of coalition building. And if the Republicans retain their majority in the Senate, there's absolutely nothing to stop him from going out and stumping all over the country and keeping the revolution such as it is stoked. And he's got two new entities. One of them is called the Sanders Institute, and I can't remember off the top of my head the name of the other one, but these are organizations that are designed to outlast him.
Who funds them?
I'm pretty sure he can take the money, the money that he's got left from what he raised, and he can't put it in his pocket, but he can get that institute started. And then, of course, they've got this email list.
Oh. Is it accurate? He got it from the DNC.
Well, no. It apparently worked to the tune of, some several tens of maybe hundreds of million dollars. So I'm pretty sure that wasn't being sent to him by a Nigerian princess.
Have you ever sent him an email and asked him to share it with you?
I know. No, I don't think he'd be allowed to spend it that way.
No,
you can't.
Share the list.
There's fine print on the Welcome to West Virginia sign at every interstate border of the state. Please don't feed the hillbillies.
Yeah. But in any event, I don't want to take up much of your time. It's still warm up here. It's still humid up here. The locals are enjoying the hell out of it, despite the fact it's a drought. And we've had less rain since the 1st of May for any period of time ever recorded in Canada for this part of Ontario.
Well, I had a note from our buddy Chris in the Northwest Territories who said that they've got a real fire problem up there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that fire at Fort McMurray eventually, before it was fully contained, ended up burning the equivalent of 6,000 square miles.
And now there's something cooking in the Northwest Territories.
Yeah.
Because Chris said something along the way in a note to me that they're planning on only saving things like essential infrastructure like mines.
And one would hope schools and hospitals and city halls and fire departments. But it's a tough road. You don't have hardwood forest up there. You have coniferous forest. And when they decide to go up, they go up real quick and they burn real hot.
Is that what we refer to as trash pine?
Yeah, sort of, yeah. Imagine, 300 square miles of good old West Virginia white pine. And there's nothing else there. And when they decide to burn, they're going to burn.
And being all full of pine tar and sap and things like that.
Real hot.
They burn real hot, real fast. Yeah.
Do you ever run into something called fat pine?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful fire starter.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Little slivers that'll burn for 5 minutes really hot.
Yeah,
we don't get that up here. We gotta import that stuff and probably pay a tariff on it. And,
maybe a GST.
Yeah, I would pass on a couple of comments asked by Canadians who are semi-astute on politics.
Oh, do please.
West. Yeah. So, what do you think the chances are if we build a wall, we can get to Trump to pay for it, or if? Not Trump. Can we get the Mexicans to pay for it so we'll wall that sucker in? And the other one I heard was, does Trump really know how stupid he is? Or does he believe all the shit his handler's telling about how smart he is?
Well, I mean, he can't compete with a baby.
No. Isn't that amazing? And he's thin skinned. And the one that really galled me, and I don't mean to sound like an old white guy here, but the one that galled me so much was an old veteran offered Trump his Purple Heart, and Trump took it today and said, this is so much better than having to earn it.
No, that part I missed.
Yeah. And I'm going...
But wait, he said a few days ago that he sacrificed for America.
Yeah. But, I mean, the veteran, you never give away a medal because you earned it. You're the only one that's entitled to have it. And two, Trump shouldn't have accepted it because he doesn't understand that you never take a medal like that as a gift. You didn't earn it. It's not yours, ever. You have no right to it. So, I turned into, for a period of a few moments, I turned into a cranky old white guy going, get the fuck out of here. You don't own it. You don't earn it. It ain't yours. Give it back. And then I was yelling at the old guy that gave it to him because he thought it would make Trump feel good and you'd get a few minutes of TV time.
Jesus God. You know, we have a Purple Heart here in this house. It was not...
They're important.
It was not given, so to speak. It was passed down. my uncle.
It's in the family.
My uncle received it posthumously in Europe.
Yep.
And it was put into the care and custody and control of my father, along with my uncle's flag. And I now have the care, custody, and control of those items.
And it's treasured, I bet.
It absolutely is.
Yep.
His certificate, signed by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, or an electronic machine doing Franklin Delano Roosevelt's signature, hangs on our wall. And what you just told me makes me sick.
Yep. And somewhere out there, apparently, there is a Bronze Star medal that belongs to my dad. I've never been able to find it. I don't know which family member has it, had it, disposed of it, or whatever. But I do plan to look into seeing what I can do about getting it reissued. It was a Bronze Star medal that was awarded to Patton's Third Army that went through the Battle of the Bulge. He was a medic there. He wasn't a combatant as such. I presume he carried a sidearm. I'm not sure. But on the headstone that was provided by the Veterans Administration, he was killed in a car accident in 48. And the headstone just had BSM on it, and I had no clue what that meant. And a few years ago,
Bronze Star Medal.
Yeah. My sister and I placed a new headstone on his grave and moved a footstone, and I took it, scraped away all the moss and all that stuff and took a picture of it, and it just had BSM on it. And the tank battalion he was attached to. And so I did some research and found out, yep, the entire battalion got to BSM for what they went through in Bastogne. And it was, I've still got to look into the protocol of tracking down how to get one reissued. Unfortunately, a lot of those records were lost because they were stored in a military records facility somewhere in Kansas, I think, that it's burned, and millions of records disappeared in smoke. So there may be an issue, but just the fact that it's on a gravestone should represent something. So we'll track it down. But the point is, those medals are not to be transferred and given as gifts. They're not trinkets. Every damn one of them was earned. And there's not many things that'll get my blood up quite as much as watching somebody try to capitalize on what they did while they were in the military. Or other people take advantage of it, like this old vet did to get his few minutes of TV time to say how much he supported Trump. And Trump took the damn thing because he didn't understand the significance of a Medal for Valor.
I think you're cutting him slack, Ron.
Pardon me?
I think you're cutting him slack that he didn't understand.
Well,
he didn't know because it didn't matter, because it's not something that he ever had to learn or be aware of in order to hustle up a buck.
Well, I have bad.
I mean, this man is crass. This man is gauche.
Ooh. Is he left-handed?
And this man is—he's look. Okay, you're not. This is not going to be lost on you because of where you grew up and where I grew up. He is Poe. He is rich white trash.
Nouveau riche, as the French would put it. He's got the money, doesn't understand the class that should accompany it. He's a dickwad, Bob. Why don't we just come right out and say it?
Yeah, he's a dick. wait, I think we've got a thing for that. Hold on.
You dick!
Yeah. That, you know, I keep that handy.
Yeah. But we've, what have we got, 96 days left? Until Fox goes nuts because their guy lost?
You know, don't say that.
I know.
Because there's too great a risk. I mean, I've got an article here that I sort of had set up to sort of deconstruct. It was published in Salon today by Bob Seska. Real hardcore, I'm with her, hilarion type. And he writes, Donald Trump is an existential threat to American democracy, and therefore he can't simply lose the election. He has to be electorally humiliated, crushed, embarrassed. The candidate who pledged so much winning has to be personally mortified by an unequivocal loss, an electoral massacre so severe that it leaves little room for screeching about rigged elections, and more importantly, the loss has to be so overwhelming that it discourages any similar would-be populist tyrants from emerging in the future. In a word, Trump and anyone similar needs to be politically put down in a way that permanently ends whatever derangement led us to this point. And I read that paragraph and thought, brother, are we talking about the same country?
Yep.
Because it's going to be close. And if Hillary's sitting over there in the Clinton bunker, or bubble, or whatever the hell it is, thinking, ha ha ha, I've got this wrapped up. It's in the bag.
That
gives me the turtle squirts, Ron.
I just hope Hillary doesn't decide to play it safe. Because she's not. She's got to come out and go right for the throat, the balls, and kick his poor broken down flat feet as well.
Yes. She's got to make him turn from orange to purple.
Oh, yeah. Poking, prodding, sticking. Make him react. He's got no switch. He's binary. It's either full attack or full attack. And piss him off. Just keep pissing him off and making him feel aggrieved all the way through the cycle. And I don't care if you got to come out and use all those unpolitical terms. By the way, Obama today said Trump wasn't really qualified.
Oh, he gutted him like a carp.
He did. But only about 40% of the people who heard that will react to it simply because he didn't get down in the gutter. He didn't, you know, drag out the
Well,
gutter.
There's about 40% that are going to say, well, you know, that Kenyan Muslim, you slurper.
Right. It's Hillary's job to, you know, get down there on the street. I'm sorry, lady. You're going to have to get the hems of the skirt dirty because you're going to have to be punching up and really nail this guy every chance you get. Point out how stupid he is. Point out how bigoted he is.
And that's the and that's the argument that I've been making lately, Ron. The advice of Mark Twain notwithstanding, to wit, never wallow with a pig in shit.
Yeah.
You'll both get covered in shit, and the pig enjoys it. I understand what that means, but sometimes, you don't fight barbarians according to the Marcus of Queensberry rules.
Well, it should be obvious to everyone that those rules went out the window in this election, and the thing I find interesting, and an aside here, I watch Fox for entertainment. And ever since Roger Ailes has disappeared, you can see so many people, not the mainstreamers, but you can see so many of their reporters and commentators sort of coming back to the middle, using more journalistic language, not being quite as assholish as they were before. Go check out their website. The headlines are less garish than they were before. And you can sense a whole bunch of people sucking back and reloading and going, ooh, let's see what the brothers want us to be when we grow up. Because we've gone through our adolescence now. We're going to grow up into something, and we need them to tell us what it is. So people aren't quite as upfront and racist and bigoted and all the other crap that went along with Republicans and their network, which was Fox. They're still for the Republicans, but they're sort of backing off and hedging their bets. Remember the scene in the 2012, and when the Ohio results came through, and one of the evening reporters went running down the hall to the analyst who had reported that Obama had won Ohio. He was going, is this true? Really? Is this true? I can't believe.
Yeah, Rove had a, he turned blue.
Yeah,
hey, look, Yubi, he's tiny and plaid.
I hope, I would love to see the results be right up there with McGovern and Nixon this time.
So would I.
Or better.
So would I, see him not carry a state. But that ain't going to happen, Ron. Talabama is going to, and West Virginia, I mean, come on. I know you haven't been talking with the that deep in conversation with the Reverend Craig this evening.
No.
I mean, Donald Trump is going to win 30 states.
How many electoral votes do they have?
Well, there's states that, I mean, that's the low hanging fruit theory that the Democrats live and die by. You can lose a lot of states as long as you get California, Florida, New York, Pennsylvania, Washington, Oregon, Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Ohio, and the rest of the country can hang fire.
Yeah.
By the way, I just had a note from Clarence. Clarence said, Bob, I'm old school. I'm waiting for Trump to zip his head down. Welcome back, Andy Kaufman. This joke has run its course.
I miss Andy Kaufman.
Yeah, but I get Clarence's joke more than.
In any event, I will sign off.
Oh, by the way, I've been corrected on one thing. I have to share this with you. I've been corrected on one thing. Sparky. Let me know that last Friday on Bill Maher's program, where and Bernie was on it, he didn't say he'd never run again. He said, when Maher questioned him, he said, thank you very much, but for 4 years from now is a long time from now. My term ends in 2 years as a United States Senator from Vermont. Everything being equal, I intend to run for re-election from Vermont, a state that I love very, very much.
Oh.
So, I had heard him say previously, or someone, well, that he wasn't, but now he says he is, which is fine by me.
So he'll be
because one of the essential, I think one of the essential missteps in naming Tim Cold Bowl of Cream of Wheat Kane is the fact that that puts a Virginia Senate seat in play. This year, then 18.
And Virginia's got to be a nickel flipper. It's got to be in play for both sides.
Yeah. And I guess the calculus was that there was a better shot at keeping the Virginia seat Democratic than maybe keeping Sherrod Brown's seat Democratic in Ohio.
And Virginia also just lost Ralph Stanley, a name I'm sure you'll recognize.
Yeah.
Who came out in when Obama was first running and going, people, this man deserves to win. And Southwestern Virginia went for Obama because Ralph Stanley was a god. And he's dead now. It's hard to believe that an old bluegrass musician.
Well, but that was 08. Obama 08, lost his ass in 12 in Southwest Virginia.
Yeah. But, and in 12, Stanley didn't come out to support him. He didn't 08. I still have the message from Kelly who said, oh, you got to hear this. But bottom line, West Virginia is going to go Trump. Virginia is going to go, who knows?
You know, the Fourth Circuit striking down North Carolina's voter suppression law couldn't have come at a more important time.
Yeah. And they're looking at the voter ID law and transgender. They struck down the legislation on bathrooms. Did they not?
No. Well, they didn't directly do it. They said that to the extent that it involves schools, it violates Title IX.
Oh, okay.
But Pat McCrory is having a purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy because his Democratic challenger for governor, who also happens to be the attorney general, said, well, you know, I'm not going to defend the potty bill. The potty law. And now, with the Fourth Circuit striking down their voter suppression law, he has also declared, and you know, this is the prerogative of being an attorney general. Said, nah, I'm not going to defend that one either. Because the court has spoken. Yeah. And I think the court is right.
I have a friend on that court.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't involved in this. I was researching it carefully because at some point we're going to run into each other in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And I wanted to be able to pull his chain. But he bowed right out of that one. So.
Now, get this. This is a little bit shocking as we head out the door, Ron. Just got a note from Mark in Florida.
Usually me reminding you, by the way.
That's your job. In Georgia, latest polling in Georgia shows, get this, Hillary and the man that Jen in Australia refers to as the orange tomato bug are tied 45-45.
In Georgia?
In Georgia.
Holy crap.
So all of a sudden, people like Steve from Georgia stand saying, nah, I'm voting for Hillary. Turn one red state. Turn one Confederate state.
Okay, but I would want to know where the poll was conducted because I've said for years that Nashville ain't Tennessee, Louisville ain't Kentucky.
And Atlanta ain't Georgia.
Georgia. So it would
But there's a great concentration of voting there, and Atlanta is blue, not red.
I know.
And if folks can get to the polling place, makes a difference.
It does.
This could be very interesting. Ron, thank you very kindly. I love the conversation. You know I always do. I hope we talk again.
97 days, Bob.
I hope we talk again before you head to the sandbox. Will you be back from the sandbox before day 97?
Oh, yeah. I'm back from the sandbox on the 13th or 14th. And then I'm taking a road trip, which may involve me having the opportunity to pick up something called Plantation Grand Reserve Rum from Barbados.
Ooh.
You interested?
Oh, damn straight.
Okay.
Ain't going to pour that on no pound cake.
Nope.
Ron, have a good evening, my friend.
Bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Ron in the muggy, but somehow still comfortable north. Well, there went 3 hours. I know not how, But I thank you all very kindly for your kind attention and your thoughts and your input and your calls. And I look forward to tomorrow and prayer meeting Wednesday. Thank you, Snork. Thank you, Snork, very kindly. Snork took us down to $152.50 to go in fundraising for the evening, which means tomorrow's fundraising goal will be $352.50, depending on what happens with subscriptions. And remember, a $10 a month subscription is always handy. And also remember, Brother Deacon Gerald, chairman of the Building and Grounds Committee of the Cathedral of Common Sense, still has on offer a doubling of the next two $10 subscriptions. So subscribe at $10 a month. Just click the little box, and Brother Deacon Gerald will double it. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night. Later.